The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome to another edition of The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. Chris, obviously a lot of news to get to, but I should mention that later in the show we'll be speaking with Stu Hoegner, senior gaming lawyer, talking about the legalities of poker. But let's get right into the news. I don't even know where to start, but I guess we'll start with the iSeries, Poker Royalty, launching that tournament, which was beginning last week. And this is... it's an interesting tournament, to say the least. I mean, people aren't allowed to watch the tournament, but they'll be shown whole cards, and then people can make bets on it. I mean, I understand it's sort of innovative, and they're trying to do something new, but it just seems like a lot of things can go wrong with this.
Yeah, I don't know where I sit on this one just yet. It's going on this week as we speak. It's being held in the Isle of Man, which tells you a lot about it, you know?
Isn't that where James Bond fought some bad guy one time in one of his movies? The Isle of Man just sounds like one of those places.
Yeah, I mean, they've had to take it to a place where it's essentially legal for them to do what they do. I'm not entirely sure about this. I mean, you know, I have a great amount of respect for Brian Balzba and Poker Royalty. There's reason to believe that there are some big-name poker players who have invested in this.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's an interesting concept, but I think in the wake of what happened with Full Tilt, it's difficult not to look at this with a bit of a cynical eye and say, well, you know, it would just be so easy for... I mean, poker pros are broke half the time. That's just the nature of the business, right? You have boom weeks, months, and years, and you have bust weeks, months, and years. So if you can bet on this, how easy is it to just say to one of your friends, hey, look, you know, put $100,000 on me.
Yeah.
And I will lose spectacularly.
Yeah.
You know, that part of it sort of bothers me. You know, it's just one of those things. I think it's a neat idea, but boy, oh boy, I'd like to see an awful lot about the way that it's being regulated, the scrutiny that it's going to be under, and everything else before I put any money on it.
Well, it definitely does sound fishy. I mean, and the fact that you can't even see anybody and you can just see cards. I don't know. That sounds fishy to me as well. As far as what you can bet on, you know, they include the odds to win the table, the next player to be eliminated, and the flop as well. You can bet on red or black, basically. That's what it comes down to. But
those kind of bets, those are just prop bets that poker players make a lot of the
exactly.
time themselves. I don't have any issue with that. To me, that's not the issue. The issue to me is the being able to bet on players. You know, and I'm not suggesting for a second that anyone that's there now, that's part of this right now, would do anything inappropriate, but you know, you can't have those doors open in the world of gambling, that it's possible to do that, because there's always going to be questions. So if you're thinking of betting on a player to win, you know, maybe your $65 would be better spent trying to satellite into a $1 million tournament.
Yeah, that sounds completely awesome. If I'm going to do that, of course, the big one for one drop, which is coming up, the World Series of Poker, the $1 million buy-in event. It'll be the largest poker tournament ever held, with a projected 8-figure first prize, and you can satellite your way in for as little as $65.
This is awesome. I mean, honestly, this is you can play. So there's a $1 million poker tournament, and I can tell you for certain that poker pros out there, even rich poker pros out there, are looking to sell off pieces of themselves to play in this $1 million buy-in tournament, because $1 million is a lot of money. So even poker pros, you've gone above their comfort level with a buy-in at $1 million that these guys are trying to chip it off a little bit here and there to absorb it a bit. So the biggest tournament ever, the biggest buy-in tournament ever, bar none. They think that they might have 30 players, they might have 25 players, they might have 40 players. Nobody really knows for sure. But you could get in there. Could you imagine a guy who starts out with a $65 satellite and ends up with a seat at the one drop, a $1 million buy-in? This would be the greatest Cinderella story in the history of poker.
Yeah, and it's one seat will be created for every 40 entries in the mega satellite. And, you know, obviously, as a side note, everybody remembers Chris Moneymaker. That's how he won the World Series of Poker through satellites. I mean, it's just been a fantastic, you know, I guess, venture for people that want to get into these big tournaments to go through these satellites.
It's, you know what?
It's been amazing.
There's a guy named Eric Dresch who invented the satellite to the poker tournament, and every poker player should thank him personally because he's just that kind of a guy that, you know, he's just... He was brilliant. He thought this up, and that's what's made it accessible for everybody. That's the reason for the poker boom.
I mean, you might be playing while you're down there, but are you going to be checking out this the big one for one drop?
I'm going to satellite my way in. Are you kidding me?
I guess you might as well, yeah. Maybe you'll be sitting there.
Wow.
I won't even ask you, are you going to watch it?
Yeah,
you can say, I'm playing in it.
Yeah, I'll sell you a piece.
How much? How much?
I'll sell you $100,000 worth of me in the $1 million tournament for $99.5.
Wow. Thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. That's like 3 weeks worth of work for me. So I'll have to let you know. It's not that bad, people. I work in radio, but it's not that bad. Don't worry. Don't feel bad for me. I get to do this as a living. So it's doing just fine. We go from some good news, I guess, to some bad news and sort of strange news, I guess, as well as Full Tilt Poker. You know, the reported plans to relaunch this year later this year seem to be in motion. They've thrown up some job listings on an Irish employment website. Of course, Full Tilt Poker's headquarters are in Dublin, and this is strange. I mean, a lot of people, we've talked about this on the show before. I mean, we expect them to eventually, you know, get back into business, but are they putting the cart before the horse here, Chris?
I don't think so. It doesn't sound like it. One of their subsidiaries applied to have one of their gaming licenses changed from a category one to a category two, which makes it accessible for online gaming. So that's a huge move. And then along with that, Pocket Kings, which was essentially, that was the company that operated Full Tilt. You know, when you talk about the directors and the shareholders, that was the Full Tilt, the main company. And they're putting out ads saying that they're hiring, you know, country reps, people from around the world. It looks like they're going to be very Eurocentric now because Full Tilt was always pointed more towards the U.S. than anywhere else. You know, they're asking for people to speak all different languages to be customer service reps. And it looks like they're gearing up for our relaunch. Now, it's strange in that we still have not heard that this Bernard Tapie Group, the deal has been completed. So if someone's hiring, though, someone has to be behind that. And
yeah.
I'm really curious as to know who's behind that, who's in there. You know, if you apply for a job for Pocket Kings, who are you talking to? Are you talking to a representative of the Bernard Tapie Group? And that's really, you know, if that would be an interesting thing to find out as to who's pulling the strings behind this and to see where they're going. They look like they're going to try and get back into it. And I can say clearly and concisely, there is absolutely zero chance that I would deposit one red cent with any reincarnation of Full Tilt.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, on the other side, if you are looking for a job, I mean, you know, you have to go where the money is in some cases. And despite, you know, the tarnished name that Full Tilt Poker has, I mean, if you're somebody that has a choice, I mean, to go to, say, a website like Party Poker or Full Tilt, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, I think the only question that has any reality in the poker world to everyone now is simply, does this mean anyone's got any shot of getting their money back?
Right.
You know, and I'm not convinced that that's what this means or that's where it's headed. But, oh boy, I just wish this would be over and done with, really.
Yeah, well,
that's just the truth. I just want it to be done. You know, I don't ever want to hear Full Tilt again.
I think that's going to be kind of hard, especially when we do this show.
Maybe it was an April Fool's joke.
Maybe. Maybe that's what it was all along. Probably not.
Well, there were a few out there.
There were a few, including Daniel Negreanu, of course, does his weekly rant. And his latest one, I guess it was entitled Squashing Beefs.
Yes.
And he said in his video that, you know, he had a chat with Howard Lederer.
Sat down and had dinner with Howard Lederer.
Just a little chat. I don't think any baseball bats were around when they did their talk. And, of course, I'm doing air quotations as we do this radio show. I mean, clearly, you know, it's an April Fool's joke. I don't think anybody bought it. But it's good. I mean, Daniel's a great actor, first of all.
Daniel told me that he was going to do this. He didn't tell me what it was. He just told me he had a great April Fool's joke that he was going to put into his video blog. And, you know, when I saw it, I figured immediately that this is what it was. But he was really straightforward with it. And, you know, I was watching it and thinking to myself, wow, he's doing a really good job of this. And then when he capped it off with, you know, he had dinner with Howard and he believes that Howard didn't know anything about what was going on and dot, dot, dot. And then Annie Duke walks in and sits down and I'm like, oh my God, this is getting outrageous. But he sucked people in so perfectly that people are going to buy this. And I'm just sorry that he put up that April Fool's icon and, you know, started laughing, because I think it would have been absolutely hysterical to watch the poker world, the online forum poker world, explode over this. It would have been hysterical.
Well, he could have gone with it for a while, because, I mean, if he's not saying anything, either, you know, Annie Duke or Howard Lederer has to come out and say anything. So it's almost like he's fishing to get Howard out if he just kept going with the joke and didn't say anything. As far as the April Fool's joke goes, side note, what's the best April Fool's prank you've ever seen a poker pro pull? Aside from maybe this
Daniel Negreanu prank? I don't know. You know what? There's lots of people out there that do them. There's always a few funny ones and funny releases every year. We were going to do one. We had one set up. It was a good one, and I don't want to give it away, but we had a couple of poker pros that were in on it and were willing to do it, and we just couldn't put the timing together because people were catching flights and going places, and we were going to pull it off. But we will do what we were going to do at a later date, because it would have been funny.
It will be funny.
It will be funny, and the poker world will not know it's a prank, and it will explode for a little while until somebody cracks a smile.
Yeah. I can always keep a straight face when I tell jokes. That's how you can tell somebody's good at telling jokes. They're able to keep a straight face, because when people laugh at their own jokes, it's always terrible. So we won't do that. We'll play the straight faces, and we'll be able to do it. But I promise you, like Chris said, it's going to be fantastic when it does happen.
Some of the best pranks are ones that aren't intended, and nobody seems to know it, and all of a sudden you just kind of get that, oh, really? is there any chance that this is a joke? And then you feel so stupid for being sucked in. But, you know, like Daniel, he could have had the whole poker world.
Oh, he should have just kept going with it.
He did a brilliant job of it. So, that was my thought. When I saw the April Fool's thing and he started laughing, I'm like, you should have just kept a straight face, because people's heads would have exploded. It would have been fabulous to watch.
Well, now he's cried wolf. So maybe next time, if they actually do sit down and have dinner, people say no. Yeah, no,
that is not going to happen. Believe me, there's a better chance of Daniel eating beef than there is of squashing beef. He's not going to eat beef. So there's, well done.
Yeah, very well done. Speaking of jokes, this one is not a joke. George St. Pierre, who, of course, is the former welterweight champion with the UFC. I guess he is still the current UFC welterweight title holder, because he can't lose it due to injury. He is signed on with online gaming company 888 or 888, depending on how you want to pronounce it. He has signed a 12-month deal with them that will see him participate in the World Series of Poker main event, Chris.
I'm a little surprised. I've got to tell you, because I've interviewed George St. Pierre several times before for magazine stories having nothing to do with poker, and he's very much about creating a culture for children, for kids coming up, that's the right atmosphere and the right environment. So I'm a little surprised to see him jump into this. But that being said, I think he'll be good at it. It remains to be seen. I mean, it's been a long-standing practice in the poker world for companies to hire celebrity endorsees, especially athletes. You know, athletes are great endorsees. And you know what one of the funniest one was? When Poker Stars had Matt Sundin as an ambassador for a little while. And I'll tell you a quick and funny story. We were in the Bahamas playing in a tournament in the Bahamas, and I was with Daniel, and we were watching Hockey Night in Canada, because that's what Canadians do. You know, in January in the Bahamas, we watch hockey. And they had Matt Sundin. They used to do that after hours.
Yeah,
when he was in Vancouver at the time, and they did that after hours show where they would sit there and do a fairly lengthy interview with the player, and they would take some calls. So Daniel calls Matt Sundin, calls Hockey Night in Canada. They put him right through. They put the graphic up. Poker Pro Daniel Negreanu. They put him on this. They say to him, "You know what, Daniel? Ask Matt a poker question." So on the spot, on live TV, they, you know, Daniel's going to ask you a poker question, Matt. And Daniel says to him, "All right, if you have two spades in your hand and there's two spades on the board, how many spades are left in the deck?" And Matt Sundin says, I don't know, four?
Oh, no.
And there was just a moment of, uh-oh. And you could hear the people from the company that paid them all that money. Poker Stars paid him all that money to be a celebrity endorsee. You could hear their heads exploding in their rooms around the Atlantis casino because they just kind of got exposed for. He actually said, "I don't know. They just pay me to use my name." And like, oh my goodness, it was fantastic. It was a great moment to watch and to behold. And you should look it up on tape.
I'm sure
you can get it on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure I can find it. It sounds like one of those
very funny.
Just one of those moments. I guess you would just cringe.
But that being said, there are some celebrities who are quite good. I've become friends with Oral Hershiser playing poker over the years, and he's got a lot of game. You know, there are some guys out there that can play quite well. I know I would put Phil Kessel up against anybody as a poker player. He's very talented, very sharp at reading the board, knows what's going on. We've played in the World Series together. Last year, we played some events, and I'll tell you, I'd put him up against anybody. He can play. He's good.
Yeah, he's pretty good at a lot of things that he does, Phil Kessel. Coming up next on The Poker Show, we'll be joined by Stu Hoegner, senior gaming lawyer, to chat about all things as far as legalities go with the game of poker. That's next here on The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers and earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package. Play for free at PartyPoker.net to see if you've got what it takes to get to Vegas. Qualify now at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
This is The Poker Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. And as we always know with poker, there's always some legal things that we must talk about. I mean, ever since Black Friday, they've really been thrown into the forefront, especially when it comes to online gaming. But people always want to know, Chris, as well, when you throw together, say, a charity poker tournament or some sort of a fundraiser, people always want to know the legal aspects of it and what is legal and what isn't when you throw things together like that. And joining us on the line now to chat about those type of things is Stuart Hoegner, a senior gaming lawyer. Thanks for joining us on The Poker Show, Stu.
Thanks very much for having me, guys.
Now, Stu, first of all, you've been a gaming attorney for a while. What does a gaming attorney do? Because there's getting to be a lot of them out there now.
Yeah. Well, gaming attorney really describes, in a very real sense, the kinds of industry that or industries that my clients are in, gaming and betting. But substantively, I do a lot of the same kinds of things that a lot of other lawyers do, from labor issues, from corporate and tax issues, regulatory issues, that kind of thing. So it really, as much as anything, describes what business my clients are in.
Well, there's lots of ins and outs, especially in Canada, where we're located, with the poker industry and the legalities of poker. But one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about is the position of the government, which at this point has always been hands-off, in regards to things like the Kahnawake Gaming Reserve, the poker clubs that are out there, and their use as a licensing center and as a providing center for gaming companies.
Right. Well, the Kahnawake Mohawks, which are a tribe outside of a reserve outside of Montreal, 20 minutes from downtown Montreal, have been doing a few things for more than 10 years now. They've been, on the one hand, licensing land-based card rooms on the reserve, and I believe there are two active ones in Kahnawake right now. They've also been licensing online internet gaming taking place from a co-location facility that's hosted within Kahnawake. And as you point out, that has caused some tension with the Quebec government. There have been discussions over the years, I believe, as between the Mohawks and Quebec. They haven't really come to anything. And the Quebec government once in a while will make noise about the fact that their position is that the Kahnawake Mohawks are carrying on any legal business in this respect, that they're behaving contrary to the criminal code. But they haven't taken any concrete action against the Mohawks themselves. So there is that tension that I believe continues to exist as between the Quebec government, at least, and the Mohawks.
And their position, to be fair, has always been, the Kahnawake's position has been, that they're a sovereign nation, that they govern themselves, they police themselves, and therefore they are not subject to the laws of Canada.
Correct. Their position has consistently been they are a sovereign people, and that they have the right based on that sovereignty, but also based on the Constitution, which guarantees First Nations peoples the right to historical activities and customs that have carried on pre-contact to preserve those customs. And their position is that gaming and betting has a long history within Ganawagi, and that pre-contact, and that they are entitled to license and manage and conduct that activity from within the reserve, and that extends because rights are dynamic. Just because one hunted hundreds of years ago with bow and arrow doesn't mean that one is confined to hunting with bow and arrow in this day and age, and that therefore that right is dynamic and extends to regulating and conducting and managing internet gaming.
Stu Hoegner, senior gaming lawyer, joining us here on The Poker Show, Rob Wong and Chris Tessero. And we kind of mentioned it off the top, Stu. We see, you know, what's been going on south of the border with Black Friday and everything. And clearly, you know, that hasn't been an issue here in Canada. We see, you know, sites like Party Poker and, you know, obviously Poker Stars, you know, really thriving north of the border. But we look at Full Tilt Poker and all the issues that they've gone through. I mean, when you kind of step back and just look at that situation and all the issues that they have, I mean, it seems like they're coming on the right track. We've, you know, heard some statements made by, you know, one of the co-owners and all these things that have been going on. Do you see them potentially, you know, being able to come back to where they were before that kind of, you know, the big status that they had in the poker world?
You mean Full Tilt?
Yes.
Look, tough to say. I'm not acting for any of the parties in that, and I'm really guessing along with everyone else about what's going to happen. I will say this, with every passing day, and I've said this publicly before, with every passing day, it seems to me to become less and less likely that something's going to happen. Of course, everyone hopes that some kind of a transaction or a deal can take place so that players in the United States and elsewhere can be reimbursed, but I just don't know.
Now, what was your thoughts, Stu, when you read the Alderney Gaming Control Commission's release about their investigation of themselves? I know they hired an outside agency, but basically, they laid it all on Full Tilt.
Right. I don't want to impugn how Alderney has conducted itself or how any gaming regulator has conducted itself here. You know, I certainly couldn't speak for them. I couldn't speak for or against them here. I think that if anything, there might be lessons to be learned by every online regulator or most online regulators about the amount of monitoring that needs to take place and continuous and random auditing and follow-up and investigations that need to take place in the industry going forward. It's not really just a matter of assessing suitability from the get-go and then sort of letting everything go and relying on good actors to make good decisions. I'm not saying that that's what happened here, but maybe that might be one of the lessons involved. Although I understand from a very cursory review of the documents that have come out of that investigation by Alderney, by the independent investigator, that there might have been problems in terms of meeting the suitability standards at the very beginning. I understand that lawyers were sort of interposed, and there wasn't a lot of call it transparency at the outset. With that relationship.
They basically said that they tried to find out who the principal owners were and couldn't. Because of roadblocks thrown up by the lawyers.
That either. I don't mean to suggest that they did have a full suitability review at the outset. I just don't really know. I'm not close enough to the situation. But you know, there are certainly lessons to be learned for a number of regulators in that respect.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that was the province of Ontario for a couple years now have been talking about making the move into online poker.
Correct.
And you know, I've said this publicly. I've written articles about it. First of all, I think it's foolish because I don't think they can be successful. But beyond that, I was stunned, absolutely stunned, a couple months ago when I read the release that the government of Ontario, the AGCO, had hired, had signed a memorandum of understanding with the Alderney Gaming Control Commission to help advise them on their move. This, to me, seemed absolutely idiotic.
Well, I would temper any comments about that with an acknowledgement that the government of Ontario is really getting advice, and the AGCO and OLG is really getting advice from a number of different quarters. So I wouldn't necessarily see that as something dispositive, the fact that Alderney's their exclusive partner or some kind of relationship like that, like coming in kind of steering things, because they're dealing with a lot of, Ontario that is dealing with a lot of reputable actors in the sector. Alderney is just, you know, one of the sets of groups that they're consulting with, I would put it that way. I'd also note that I believe that Alderney has been in talks with Nevada, and I believe that the AGCC signed a memorandum of understanding with the Nevada regulator.
Right, but Nevada backed out of it after all of the full tilt shenanigans.
But, oh, did they? I didn't.
Yes, I believe they did.
They canceled their memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, I believe that they no longer deal with Alderney.
But Nevada is, a top-tier regulator as well. So I wouldn't read too much into it. I mean, yeah, Ontario is soliciting advice from a number of different quarters, and Alderney is one of them.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, unless this is something like, you know, hiring a really good thief to advise you how to put your security system up, this just didn't make any sense to me. Why would you hire the Gaming Commission that oversaw the theft of $400 million from their players?
Well, you know, Ontario is out there getting advice from a number of different quarters, and again, I wouldn't particularly read too much into it. I mean,
well, that's our job as radio hosts.
No, fair enough. I mean, Ontario made the decision it made. I'm not privy to, they're not my client. I'm not privy to all that went into that decision.
Stu Hoegner, senior gaming lawyer, joins us here on the Poker Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. And I'm just curious, Stu, to get your thoughts on the legalizing of online poker in the U.S. I mean, obviously the federal, it didn't go through federally, and they're trying to do it state by state now. I mean, just your thoughts on the current status of online poker in the U.S. and the legalizing of it.
It sounds like the consensus is that action is going to shift to the states. That there have been a number of attempts through the Barton bill, through Senator Reid's measure, which was not introduced but was certainly circulating, through Barney Frank's bill, there were and which became the Campbell bill. There have been a number of attempts at the federal level. I don't think, if you speak to a guy like Frank Fahrenkopf from the AGA, that they're exactly giving up. But it sounds like and seems like most of the action is going to shift to the states. I mean, Nevada's going forward with and accepting applications in respect of service providers, in respect of interactive gaming operators, in respect of marketing affiliates, in order to get their state regime up and going. Other states are looking at it, so it sounds like it's going to go on a state by state basis, at least for the foreseeable future.
It's fun to watch what's going on, and I know that you partake in a lot of the seminars, the talks, the gatherings that go on in the states to see what people are saying, and it seems like the mood and the talk has definitely switched in the last 6 to 8 months.
I think that's probably fair to say. I think there have been a number of quarters that have said that it's going to be a state matter for a long time, but I think more and more you're seeing people pile into that kind of viewpoint.
Stu, we're just running out of time in this segment, but we'll continue talking after the update. We'll chat about charity poker tournaments and fundraisers as well with you next here. So if you can stay on the line, we'll continue to chat all things poker from a legal perspective. Stu Hoegner, a senior gaming lawyer, is our guest. He'll continue to join us. You're listening to The Poker Show with Chris DeCero and myself, Rob Wong, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. And just because he was so good the first segment, we brought him back again. Stu Hoegner, senior gaming lawyer, joining us here on The Poker Show, talking about all things legal stuff, I guess, when it comes to poker. And Stu, thanks for sticking around, my friend.
Thanks very much for having me, guys.
Now, there's just so much to ask and so little time here. We've talked about a lot of things, but one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is that, particularly where we are in Ontario, you know, I do talk to the AGCO on a semi-regular basis and try and keep up on what's going on there. But one thing that I get a lot of, an awful lot of, I mean, I'm a tournament director. I get asked to participate in charity events and celebrity events and things like that, poker-wise. People in this province do not have a clear understanding of what is legal and what is not legal as far as poker goes, as far as going to play poker. You can go to the casino and play poker, and that's pretty much, you can play poker in your basement, as long as you're not taking a rake.
Right.
And that's pretty much it. All of these fundraisers that people do, and I get inundated with them. My son's in minor hockey, and I hear about, you know, in September and October, like 30, 40, 50 of them I'll get invited to. You know, people say, well, we're going to have a poker fundraiser, raise money for our hockey team. Illegal.
Correct. In Ontario, you need to be, if you're going to carry on a poker tournament for profit, whether the funds go to go to charity or otherwise, you're going to need a license to undertake that activity from the AGCO.
Right. And the license is a lottery license. Because in Canada, poker is designated by the Canadian government as a mixed game of skill and chance.
It is defined in the criminal code as a lottery scheme, and that
yes.
Needs to be licensed by provincial auspices. Yeah.
Right, and it's interesting because it doesn't fall strictly under the gaming regulations as such. And we all know, I mean, the out with some people is that, you know, Tim Hortons conducts a lottery. It's called Roll Up the Rim to Win. But because there's no purchase necessary, if you can do it for free, it's okay. And that's the one subtle difference about it. But nobody's running a charity fundraiser poker tournament for free.
Right. So if there's a free, you're right. If there's a free alternative mode of entry, fame, then that generally can get you out of things. If there's a skill testing question, which we find all over the place, a test of sufficient skill, using bed mass in mathematics, that should also be sufficiently skillful, depending on how tough the question is, to get you out of the gaming provisions. So the gaming provisions very generally require chance, consideration, and prize. And if you, it's a three-legged stool, if you knock out one of those legs, then you're dealing with something that should be able to pass muster much more easily. I don't say always, because some pure skill games can be caught up in some of the criminal code provisions. But very generally, if you could get rid of one of those legs on the stool, then you've got a better chance at making something kosher.
But let's be clear here so that people understand this, because as I say, I get asked this question constantly.
Yep.
You cannot run a charity poker tournament. It's just, you can't do it, because people do it and they say it's $125 to play and blah, 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 blah. This is illegal. I get asked all the time, and I have to tell people the same thing over and over again. I'm sorry, I wish you the best of luck raising money for your hockey team, for your charity, for whatever it is, but you can't do that because it's illegal. There's a very specific way to do it, and that is not it.
If there's a fee, if there's a buy-in to the tournament, whether it's done for charity or otherwise, and it's not done pursuant to provincial license here in Ontario, then it's not allowed, correct?
How difficult is it, Stu, to get the license to do this? I mean, you just heard Chris mention that people always ask him, you know, how do I get this? How do I get this done? I mean, now that we're here and we're talking about it, I mean, what are the steps that people have to take to make sure that they don't get into trouble if they're doing something like this?
Yeah, you can't get one.
I guess yeah, not. Yeah,
it's the bottom line is actually that's exactly right. It's very tough to get one in Ontario. I'm not aware that that the AGCO is actually willing to give out those licenses, and. I've discussed with other attorneys, and I've tried myself to. I get calls all the time for people that want to try to start poker tournaments in Ontario, have a live tournament here. And as a matter of policy, the AGCO, I believe, last time I looked, they're just not giving out those kinds of licenses. Now, Chris was just up in Montreal at the Party Poker Classic. Quebec is a jurisdiction that has been much more receptive to granting those kinds of private licenses for individual land-based tournaments. And they've had more success in pulling those off in Quebec on a completely licensed basis. But in Ontario, it's much more difficult.
Yeah.
Now, there are some things like the CNE will carry on their gaming pavilion each year, their sort of little casino pavilion there. That's sort of an exception. It's an outlier.
And the to be clear, La Régie, which governs the regulations in Quebec for any sort of that gaming type of operation, they do have a different understanding or interpretation of what you need and what's necessary to do it, and they do grant it. We worked with a great lawyer up there who understands the gaming laws quite well, and he put that all together. But
right.
You know, if someone came to you in Ontario and said, I want to run a poker tournament, your basic answer has to be, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, we can always run up the flagpole and try, but when we've tried to do that before in Ontario, the AGCO hasn't been interested.
Now, clearly, this is a hypothetical question, but you mentioned the fact that, you know, Quebec has really eased off on their restrictions as far as it goes. Do you see a day where Ontario follows in their footsteps?
You'd have to ask the AGCO that. I like to think that we're going to loosen things up a bit more here, and maybe that's going to be part of, it's not going to be part of OLG's rollout. I mean, that's expanding the government role. But as part of that, the AGCO might loosen up and decide to grant licenses to have land-based tournaments here. It's possible.
Now, just before we let you go, Stu, I want to ask you, the way that things have gone in the States, it looks, as Rob mentioned earlier, they're going state by state, but I don't think federal national legislation is very far away in the United States, and it appears to be clearly tied, that tie between an online provider and a land-based casino, all those strategic partnerships are in place. How do you project, and I know it's difficult to get lawyers to make projections, but how do you see this? I know that you follow this very well. In fact, if you follow Stu on Twitter, it's at Gaming Council on Twitter, Stu. If you follow Stu, Stu's always on top of it. Lots of interesting articles come through his Twitter about what's going on in the States. How do you see this just as a spectator of what you think might happen and how it's going to play out? And should I be buying more Party Poker stock? Because I think they're in the best position of everybody.
Look, Party Poker is a great company, and they're doing a lot of the right things in this sector, and they continue to. I still get the strong sense in the United States that there's not going to be anything passed at the federal level, certainly this year, and maybe for another couple of years. Nelson Rose says, and I think it's a fair point, Nelson Rose says the Congress can barely agree on a budget to keep the government going. So I query whether or not, whether regulating internet poker or internet gaming of any kind at the federal level is really on anyone's is really on a majority of congressmen's or congresswomen's radar screens. So I think you're probably still going to see things stay at the state level for the foreseeable future. I mean, that's a guess, but I think that's probably what you're going to see. And there's not going to be a national role, I suspect, going forward for some time. So how that's going to play out once you have a number of states that have decided to regulate, and I do think it's a matter of when, not if, is anyone's guess. But then it's going to be kind of interesting looking, because you're going to have this patchwork of people across the country, and this is what Frank Fahrenkopf is pretty worried about. Whether that's overblown or not is, up for debate, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, you're a very smart man, and it's always dangerous to disagree with smart men, but I think that the key to this, myself, I think it's going to come sooner rather than later, although I agree with you, not till after the election in the U.S. There's no chance of that. But I think that the very fact that they now understand, the U.S. government understands clearly how much money there is in this industry, I think they want a piece of that, and I think they want it sooner rather than later.
You could very well be right. And the interesting thing is that Nevada, take a state like Nevada, which is out in front of this. They are really in a good spot, to the extent that if they stay on a state-by-state-by-state model, Nevada is really, going to be a great jurisdiction. They're obviously going to look to do deals with other states when other states come on board and that sort of thing. But if Congress decides to regulate this, Nevada is going to be a premier jurisdiction, and Nevada is in all likelihood going to be one of the regulatory bodies that Congress looks to as part of the top tier to regulate this industry. So they're setting themselves up, seems to me, they're setting themselves up very well, whether it stays on a state-by-state basis or whether it goes national. So so that'll be interesting to see.
Well, if you want a great resource to keep up on what's going on with all of this political and legal stuff, follow Stu on Twitter, at Gaming Council on Twitter. If you follow my Twitter, at Chris DeCero, or Rob...
at Wong SN590. I know we've had this discussion before.
I always get it wrong. We'll retweet your stuff. It's great information, and everyone should keep up on what's going on because it's going to be fun to watch how this develops. And
I agree with that 100%.
Your expertise is muchly appreciated in this.
Thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate it.
There's Stu Hoegner, senior gaming lawyer, joining us here on The Poker Show. We are just running out of time on this edition, but we got a lot of stuff to get to for next week's show. And for that, I'll just hand it over to Chris.
Well, it's time to start talking seriously about the World Series of
Poker. It's coming fast.
Because now is the time. Everyone's planning their trips. Everyone's planning where they're going to stay in Vegas, what events they're going to play in. It's all out there. So we've got to start dialing in the World Series of Poker. And, you know, we're going to try and maybe see if we can put something together out there for our listeners that maybe they can get down there and catch a little bit of it. So we'll keep you posted on that, and we're going to start focusing in, man. It's time.
Speaking of focusing in, I saw on Twitter that you mentioned, you know, where should you stay this year? Have you thought all that out yet? I mean, we can get more into detail next week, but have you begun making the travel plans?
You know what? For me, part of it, I'm like everybody else. Wherever they comp me, I'm good. Truth, that's a terrible thing to say, but I used to stay at the Wynn quite a bit. I had a great deal with the Wynn. They were wonderful to me there, and I really appreciate that hotel, but I love the new Aria.
Ah, it's fantastic.
Something else.
Like I said, I was there last week. And
well, you were there for what, 7 minutes a night?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I did spend a lot more of my time at New York, actually. Going to the restaurants there and playing some other table games there. But, I mean, honestly, everybody that has asked me, you know, how was your Vegas trip? I say Aria, like, the hotel is fantastic. This is the second time I've been there. I mean, it's just state-of-the-art. I mean, that's all I can say. It's just a gorgeous,
you know what?
Gorgeous hotel.
I know an expert on Las Vegas. I know someone who knows everything about Las Vegas, and we'll get her on to talk about it.
About everything Vegas?
Everything. Where to stay, where to eat, everything.
See, we should have had her on before everything. I left, Chris.
Well, you were going to do it. You were going to do it anyway.
I guess so. It was out of my hands. My brother-in-law booked Aria. That's his favorite hotel.
Loss there. That was a good move.
No, exactly. Could have been staying at Circus or something like that, you know? I stayed there when I was 6, actually, when my family went to Vegas when we were kids. So.
Wow. If this ended up with you running away and joining the circus, it would be a great story.
I actually did get lost at the Circus Casino. I was watching a bunch of kids play in the arcade, and the rest of my party walked away, and they left me there. And I thought my family went back
to
Canada.
And that was an accident?
It was an accident. Uh-huh. I wasn't planning on getting lost, okay? Yeah. I was 6 years old.
No, I just meant the part where your family walked away and left you there.
Oh, possibly. I haven't asked them, but...
My family has left me many places around the world, and I keep finding my way home.
Yeah, well, if my family wants to leave me in Vegas now at this age, by all means... By all means, please,
good deal.
Just walk away. But like you said, we'll definitely get in-depth more regarding the World Series of Poker and talk a lot more about Vegas on next week's edition of The Poker Show. If you ever miss an episode, you can catch us on iTunes or check us out on sportsnet590.ca. For Chris DeCero, I'm Rob Wong. You've been listening to The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.